that better align with the short, mid, and long range transportation horizons.
Right.
Again, I don't have any comments, but I would feel more comfortable if EPA would be able to have the opportunity to weigh in, especially being that this is so technical.
Yeah, Jasmine, I kind of, as you, even before you spoke, I thought as we're going to go through the rest of this list, I think what we ought to do, Carl, is to just send the entire list again to Adam and say there was discussion about all of these elements. Here are the preliminary decisions that we made pending any feedback from you, rather than just, you know, tick him multiple emails about moves, model versions.
Yeah, so, and I'll
something along those lines. So I'd suggest with that approach that without Adam on the call, that we continue forward knowing that we're going to try and get his review of all of them through a follow-up email.
Right. Okay. So the next one we had, that, and Tom, thank you for filling out the agenda. Department of Motor Vehicle Registration.
Well, yeah, you'll just need to go scroll back to the list. This is those sort of additional elements all tie back to this list. So we're going to hit all of those as we walk through the rest of the list. Just in passing, the one there called California LEV emission rates. As I mentioned in response to an earlier question, this is where we utilize knowledge about the fact that Oregon has adopted California's vehicle standards. And as I explained earlier, there's a provision in MOVES to use an alternative set of basic emission rates that reflect the California standards versus the rest of the 49 state standards. That used to be a much bigger deal 20 years ago than it is today, but there's still some slight differences. So to be consistent and as accurate as possible, we're proposing, as we did with the previous AQCD, to again use the California LEV emission rates. Below that, then there's the new model that TPOW will be using to generate fleet VMT, and information that we use to calculate road type VMT and speed distributions and so on and so forth. But the next ones that I want to stop at that Carl had highlighted on the agenda are ones here that generally, as I understand the process in Oregon, ODOT or ODEQ is sort of in the driver's seat to provide, and you all are collectively responsible for deciding the approach. But as I've outlined in that one right there where Carl's cursor is, we need DMV data for two MOVES inputs, vehicle populations, and then for each vehicle type to show what the age distributions are. There's a conformity requirement that involves latest planning assumptions that generally require updating DMV data whenever you do a new RTP, you know, like on a 3 or 4 year planning cycle. I've seen exceptions. They generally have to be defended. So one of the things I'll throw out for discussion in Adam's absence is, you know, we'll need to engage DEQ as quickly as possible, because as I recall last time, getting the 2016 data took them a little bit of time. And Natalie, I perked up when you mentioned Wes a few minutes ago, because he was the one that helped gather those data out of the state DMV database for us last time. So my only concern, given that the DEQ is not on the call today, is if there's a delay, how that would affect Carl's schedule. So I think we'll just need to make it a point to try and engage them and gather those data as quickly as possible. But there'll be some lead time for them to get the data, to send it through Carl to Trinity, and then for us to analyze it and incorporate it into the modeling. So I'll just kind of stop there and see if there are comments on that issue related to those two inputs.
Okay.
No comments from me, except that Jeffrey Stokum, he is probably the person to copy on taking care of obtaining that data.
Okay. I've seen his name before, Natalie. I don't think I've spoken to him, so thank you.
And James Powell is a part-time person who's still studying at PSU, who recently provided me that data for a Portland project.
How long did it take to get?
Oh, it took a while.
Okay.
A couple months, but maybe that was because he was learning how to do it.
Okay. So I'll bring this up for some discussion without derailing the time schedule that we're all under on this call. As I said before, there are some instances where an interagency consultation group, with consideration of some factors like the fact that there have been sort of steady trends within new vehicle sales in a particular area for the country, there hadn't been economic or oil priced upheavals that allowed some discretion as it related to the provenance of DMV data to satisfy latest planning assumption requirements. And I'm not trying to coax anybody into anything that they feel uncomfortable with. I'm just kind of throwing out discussion as it relates to Carl's schedule and objectives. Big picture, even if there are modest changes in the nature of 2021 versus 2016 DMV, I don't know that it's reflected in this outline table. Yeah, there it is. The data that we get from Oregon DMV to reflect local conditions is really only for passenger cars and light trucks. To try and state it simply, the heavy duty stuff doesn't get recorded into the DMV database that ODEC pulls this stuff out of. Natalie, maybe you can better characterize this than I can, but just recalling when these data were gathered 4 years ago, and I think in even a preceding planning cycle, it was just the light duty data that exists in the DMV database.
That's correct. That's the data that they provided to me. I just like to say that there were changes to between passenger car to passenger truck, more passenger trucks for the Portland data.
And oh, okay.
If that change is something that is happening in the Medford area.
Okay.
Natalie, could you repeat that?
I obtained 17, 18, and 19, population and vehicle fleet data from DEQ for Portland. And there were changes between passenger cars. So people basically buying SUVs instead of a car moving forward in time. So there might be changes. I don't know if, how much that impacts PM10 though.
Well, and that was the other point I was gonna bring up, not trying to coach anybody, that I believe, even though there's a much larger number of passenger cars and light trucks, heavy duty vehicles for PM10, and then any vehicle that's driving as it relates to the much larger fraction of emissions caused by fugitive dust are really driving the total that needs to be compared to the applicable budget.
A thought just came to me that in terms of the model type to use for all the other vehicle types and population, I don't know if you're basing it on what's in the MOVES model.
Yeah, I have a note in the table there, right, where Carl's highlighted that I'm suggesting that for all other vehicle types not captured by the Oregon DMV database that we just use MOVES defaults, which is the same that we had done in the last AQCD.
I think in that case, like the MOVES 3 would have a better heavy duty vehicle distribution than the MOVES 2014.
That's a good point. If they've updated that on a national basis.
Yeah, and they would have updated their database with more recent heavy-duty vehicles.
So I'll throw this out for the consideration and future discussion. If there's a need to inquire beyond decisions that are made in Adam's absence on this call, if Carl's concerned about schedule, would there be any willingness, and you don't have to answer this now, for us to utilize Moves 3 with the more recent default information than the old Moves model, but still use 2016 DMV data that we got with the last planning cycle, if it's going to take an extended period of time to get that from DEQ? And as I ask, of course, Carl and I are going to follow up with DEQ and put this on their radar screen as quickly as possible.
My question is, Tom, if it's PM10 fugitive dust, as far as the light duty vehicles, does it really matter what the mix of the fleet is?
It does a little bit, in that part of the equations that you use to do the fugitive dust calculation rely on the average vehicle mass. So there are elements where you basically weight the, you come up with an average mass for each vehicle type and then weight them based on the relative populations between light, medium, and heavy duty vehicles.
That makes sense.
So this may be a TBD unless people want to venture thoughts.
I think if we can have that email correspondence between the group of what EPA and DEQ thinks, and then the rest of us can chime in that we agree. That might
okay.
be the way.
As the lowly consultant on this call, that makes a lot of sense to me. Thanks, Natalie.
I agree, Natalie. This is Jeremy at FTA. I don't feel comfortable making a decision on that until we hear from EPA.
Understood, Jeremy. Thanks. So I guess then I'll just kind of walk through the rest of the stuff quickly. Those were sort of the key elements that I felt you all needed to focus on. The rest of the inputs don't affect latest planning assumption related criteria and are similar in nature to the methodologies that we had used in the last plan, with one nominal exception on the top of the next page. Just be aware as we move to the new moves, if we do so after the follow-up with Adam, there are slight differences in how fuel properties are represented geographically across the country in the two different versions of the model. I haven't really looked that up yet specifically for Jackson County in Oregon, but I did observe some slight differences that relates to how they've reallocated stuff a little bit more intelligently and dealt with portions of the country, for example, that are non-reformulated gasoline regions and coming up with what look like more representative default fuel properties. So my proposal here, sort of tied into which version of moves that we use, also suggests that if there's data that DEQ has collected, which I think they have on occasion in the past, we would use that as the first choice and then default to the moves defaults if necessary. So that was the only other thing I wanted to try and entertain some comment on this call today.
This is Natalie. When I was doing my modeling for the Portland area, I actually passed all of my inputs to DEQ, and for fuel, I was using 2014B. They recommended just using the defaults in moves, except for gasoline, the default in 2014 wasn't for E10. So that was the only thing I changed.
That was, I had observed that issue in an area of Alaska where I've done a lot of MOOS modeling, and I had to use a tool that I think is in both models called the Fuels Wizard to deal with the ethanol volume that actually existed in the area that I modeled. So I can, when we follow up with DEQ, we can ask them, you know, for what fuel properties they have and if they have any recommendations. Do you know, I honestly don't, Natalie, on this call, is Jackson County doing 10% ethanol blending or not?
I don't know.
I'm afraid, I'm sorry, I don't either. But that'll be a question we can use. Well, DEQ will know. I just don't have it at the top of my head.
It may be a statewide thing. I really just not sure.
Okay. So those are the things I wanted to call out specifically. As I said, the things that I kind of skimmed over, I presume to be less controversial and were largely, as I said, not tied to assuring that we're meeting latest planning assumption requirements and therefore can just be carried over from what was approved and used in the last AQCD. And then beyond that, you know, as we said, we're going to follow up both with requests from Adam to review all of this and CC his responses to everybody on the call, and then engage DEQ similarly as well. The road dust emission calculation methodology, Carl, I'm sorry. Yeah. That was just to see if people felt there was a need to go hunt for more current silt loading data. And I kind of touched on that in the outline.
Okay.
No comments from me. I just asked DEQ and EPA.
Okay. That's
the same for me at FTA.
We shall send out an email to that effect and make sure we get to ask them to reply all.
Ben or Jasmine, anything from the FHWA end at this point?
No, I'll have some general comments probably at the end of the meeting. General observations.
So, Carl, I think I'll turn it back over to you unless anybody has any questions of me.
Okay, I was next. Justin, you're still on the phone, so we can take care of your issue first, if you wish. Hold on, let me find the correct. So let me do this. Okay. Before we, and I hate bouncing around, I'm trying to accommodate people and their time. Justin, are you still with us? Yes, you are. Okay. So, and Jasmine, you're familiar with this project. Can everybody see the project on the screen right now?
Yes.
Yes.
OR 99. This is a project that ODOT wishes to put into the 21-24 TIP. It has nothing to do with anything we've discussed so far. I'm just kind of trying to address it right now so Justin can hear what we have to say and then be able to move on. Jasmine, you asked the question, you know, what is this? Is it exempt? Is it not exempt? I have since then put in right there the exemption, but here's where it's weird. Although this will be a project, right now they just wanted to design it. That's it. It's going to go on the shelf for now. So it's a design project for restriping the lane, basically, putting in a culvert and adding bicycle facilities and sidewalks.
Well, I'll correct you. The culvert is already a project. And so this is a segment of an overall so this is already in the current RTP, but it goes from Coleman Creek all the way to Garfield and this is the segment that we can afford with the funding that is going to become available to us here shortly. So we're trying to get out ahead of it so that we can get it designed and do right away purchases prior to the rebuilding of the Phoenix area that has been burnt.
And so all I would like to hear from my federal partners, and Natalie, you can play the role of ODEQ. You don't have to, but you probably would have an idea of what they say. Is it safe to assume this is indeed an exempt project?
Yes, for me.
That was Natalie?
Yes, sorry.
Okay. Jeremy?
I don't have any issues with that, and I would say it's the best practice, even if it is a design project, to include an exemption, because we want to capture any project that included a construction phase. And I think there's some language in the statute, don't quote me on this, but about any project that is leading to construction needing to have some sort of qualification like this. I think it's just a good practice to put the exemption in there. And even with the transit, I think the transit infrastructure could probably fit under bike and ped facilities, because you're probably going to be building some first last mile infrastructure there for those transit stops, or, you know, they're going to be going on the right of way that's already there. So I would say no comments from me. That looks good.
Ben and Jasmine?
No concerns from Federal Highway. I just a request. If you can talk about RVMPO's general process in handling exempt projects in terms of the interagency consultation process group in the future.
Well, I would assume normally we would bring it up to you before we even thought about taking to the TAC. This came up as a little bit of a surprise, and there was a rush job. And it was at the, well, Jasmine, you heard the conversation. It surprised a lot of people. We're working with ODOT right now to make sure we do, in fact, understand each other's processes and can accommodate the timelines that each of the different organizations have to meet.
Look, Carl, and aside from the timelines, I'd like to have a broader discussion about the interagency group members' comfort level when it comes to exempt projects in general. Are you planning on, so the MPO makes that determination whether a project is exempt or not. Are you going to share those exempt projects with the interagency group, or I guess, what are you thinking moving forward? Let's just think in a scenario where this Oregon 99 project was not rushed, just in general.
Yes, no, I would assume, my assumption is we get an amendment proposed, we look at it, we identify, the staff looks at it, identifies whether we think it's exempt or not. And if we, whether or not we think it's exempt, we're going to send it out to the partners and say, hey, we think this is exempt. Do you have any issue with it? If we don't think it's exempt, we're going to have to tell the people submitting the request for amendment that they're going to have to wait until we do an AQCD.
I guess my question is, in terms of the determination of an exemption, does that end at the MPO level, or is that discussed within the group?
We haven't discussed it within the group, as far as I know, since I've been here. We can. I don't know if that adds any value or not.
So somehow I feel like we had this discussion during our last interagency consultation meeting. And I thought there was a consensus to have like an email would be suffice for the group, but I'd like to hear from others. I may be making it up.
Okay, now what, Jasmine, hold on. I just told you that if we'd followed the normal procedure and if this hadn't been a rush job and we hadn't, this came in under the radar, we didn't even notice it. We assumed they knew things, they assumed we had stuff done. Like I said, if we get the TIP amendment and we have plenty of time, we look at it, we make the determination whether or not we think it's exempt. If we think it's exempt, we will email the air quality conformity group, the interagency consultation group, and send it out to you with the statement that, hey, we think this project is exempt for the following reasons. Do you agree or not? Do you need more than that?
Nope. I understand.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that.
No problem. And this was, this kind of flew under the radar because we're in the middle of a whole bunch of stuff. Anyway, we should not have missed it, and it should not have been pushed this rapidly. Let's just leave it at that. We're trying to get that cleared up. Okay, so my understanding is everybody is comfortable with stating that this project is in fact an exempt project. I'm not hearing disagreement.
This is FTA. Yes, I agree.
Okay. Okay, the last thing to go through, and hopefully this won't take that long, are the project lists that I sent you. This is for the upcoming RTP update, the 21 to 2045 RTP. And if I could, can you all see the screen? I have Ashlyn on the screen right now. Can you all see that?
Yeah, I got you, Carl. Yep.
Okay, so the question that was raised, and Jasmine raised this, was the chip seal. Why is that not required in the RTP? It's a maintenance project. Maintenance projects are required to be in the TIP, but specific maintenance projects are not required in the RTP. That's my understanding of federal regulations.
So if it's a maintenance project, then it's not going to become a STIP project, a federally funded FHWA project. They're just doing it as maintenance.
Right. It's a chip seal. It's a gravel road and they're going to coat it. If I'm not mistaken, the regulations state that the projects that are required to be in the RTP are capacity enhancement projects and projects of regional significance. Correct?
Yeah, Carl, I think the hang up is on the idea of maintenance, and Federal Highways doesn't pay for things like maintenance. When you think of, like snow removal or, somebody hits the guardrail and they got to replace a section of it. So I think that might be where the hang up is when they use that word maintenance. So this is a chip seal project that will seek federal participation.
Yeah, this normally wouldn't show up, but this is funded with CMAQ funds through the previous TIP. Still hasn't
been done yet. So it is actually a project that seeks federal participation. It's not done by the maintenance services of the state DOT. It's an actual STIP project, but it's considered maintenance under air quality conformity.
Yes, but also, again, even if it is using federal funds, it is not adding capacity and is not regionally significant. Therefore, my understanding of the federal regulations is it's not required to be in the RTP. It has to be in the TIP and STIP, but not in the long range plan.
Just throwing my quick two cents in as I look at the description there, Carl, probably because it was CMAQ funded or partially, the rationale was that by chip sealing over an existing dirt road, then that would reduce fugitive dust.
Correct. That is correct, Tom. That's why it was qualified for CMAQ funding. But again, you know, I don't want to beat this to death, but it's not adding capacity and it's not regionally significant. I'm hearing nothing from FHWA here.
Well, it's a difficult one when you're calling it maintenance, right? I mean, in effect, you're changing the PM10 of this facility, correct?
Yes, you are. But again, I know I'm really splitting hairs, but it's rather critical because what makes it eligible for CMAQ doesn't mean it has to be in the long range plan. For instance, there will be a number of projects that ODOT will undertake in the MPO area over the next 20 years, dealing with safety and a whole bunch of other issues related to culvert replacement and repair, paving, etc. We should be able to identify how much money will be spent in our area for those types of projects. But in the long range plan, we are not required to identify those specific projects. One of the major reasons is they change a lot depending on the needs of the Department of Transportation. If those projects are adding capacity or they're considered regionally significant, they are, under federal law, required to be in the long-range plan. But a chip seal is neither. It's a maintenance project. It's using federal funds, but it is a maintenance project.
This is Jeremy. I'm not an expert on highway projects, but if you're using maintenance broadly, in the most broadest way that the statute applies it, I think, system operations and maintenance are required to be in the MTP, at least at a fiscal constraint level. So you have to track the funding, the federal funding. And I would agree with you on the point that maybe a specific project wouldn't necessarily need to be called out. And even in the tip and stip, this could potentially, for like the transit side, for example, could be a group project, you know, could be a bucket. You could just call it preventative maintenance and give a general description right about what it's doing. But I think I might disagree with you on the RTP side, the MTP side, that system operations and maintenance do need to be tracked and in the plan, at least at a high level, maybe not on a project by project level, right, like something that's regionally significant.
Yeah, Jeremy, you didn't hear me or didn't understand me. Yes, in the long range plan, we have to identify rough buckets of funding that are going to such projects as safety, maintenance, and operations. That is absolutely correct. But specific projects within those categories are not required in the MTP. They are required in the TIP and STIP.
No, well, I guess it depends on how you slice it. If you're saying that the specific project's not going to be in there and by default it's not going to be in the overall fiscal constraint, then I disagree with you. If you're saying that the specific project's not going to be in there but will be in the fiscally constrained aggregate, yeah, then yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
However, not the highway person here, so I will defer to my highway colleagues. That's how I would interpret it. And so I would look to them to clarify, because I know FTA treats maintenance slightly differently, ops and maintenance slightly differently than they do.
Yeah, there are differences, and there are other reasons that we require the plans to go through planning process, that these projects are advanced in a certain way. And so if there are federal dollars being sought for the project, my understanding is it does need to be identified and therefore listed as exempt or not and go through conformity if not exempt.
Yeah, but that's a separate question than what has to be in the MTP. I don't disagree that we need to identify the federal funds. I don't disagree that if they're not exempt, you'd have to go through air quality conformity. But that's not the question. And I'm trying to find, hold on. We just adopted the RTP for the other MPO, and I'm trying to find it, the page here. This was the page, here we go. Let me see if I can do this. Okay, this is the page from the MRMPO's financial plan segment, and this is just discussing what ODOT intends to or might be spending in the MPO area. It's actually in Region 3, and that's divided between two districts, and the two districts are split roughly 60-40 in how they spend the money. However, and these numbers came from the financial guy up in Salem for ODOT, they expect to spend over a 20-25-year period $169 million on preservation, $121 million on safety, and $120 million on operations. We don't identify those specific projects. That's what I'm talking about. It would fall into this kind of bucket. We would identify that there's an anticipation of CMAQ and STBG funds going to these types of projects. It'd be primarily CMAQ because it's for road dust reduction. So that's what I'm saying. If we identify a cap, a limit at which we anticipate funding to be spent on those types of projects, that's my understanding of the federal regs. That's all we have to do.
Yeah, I think we need to have a little bit of a discussion about how we quantify and qualify maintenance and whether or not that's required to have a conformity status included in the RTP.
Okay.
Because to Federal Highways, it appears to be a standalone project. You know, we're taking a gravel road, we're going to pave it, or we're going to do something to it other than, you know, a maintenance operation. If ODOT does a maintenance operation on an existing asphalt road, they come out and they do a chip seal on it. That maintenance does not have federal dollars associated with it. It wouldn't be eligible for federal money. So by including the type of funding that's being included, that being namely CMAQ funds, that project now has requirements to include all of the normal planning processes that would be associated with a normal federal aid highway project.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can leave it in. I don't have any problem, and I can modify the conformity status. That would be, what is that, chapter of... It would be 26, table 2, and we went pavement, resurfacing, or rehabilitation. I have no problem putting that in there and leaving it as is. I really don't.
Yeah, so I'm looking at, maybe I have a different table than you. I think it's the one that you sent out. I have for project 166, the copy I have says exempt table 2 safety. And I'm not really certain you have one that says not required in the TIP. Did that change since you had sent this out?
Wait a minute, not TIP. What? I don't know what you're looking at. Do you see what I have on the screen?
I do. And I have the same spreadsheet, but under conformity status, instead of saying not required in RTP, mine says exempt table 2 safety.
Did I send you all the wrong one?
No, I have what Carl has.
Okay.
It's
Yeah, no, I'm literally looking at the exact same spreadsheet, but mine has table 2 in it.
That's weird.
I have the same dollar amounts.
I did it.
I believe
all
I pulled
email.
This from your email, Carl, or the initial invite, I believe.
That's where I got
this is the initial one I sent out. I didn't resend the table.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look into that a little bit. But
okay, I'll send you this one then. Does everything else look the same?
Well, so far, I mean, we just kind of got started, so I'm hoping it does.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's okay. So again, I will modify that table 2 exempt rehabilitation paving. I don't have a problem with that. We'll identify the funding.
Yeah, I mean, it's exempt anyway. I don't know that we have to spend a lot of time on that, really. So
okay.
I just, it's odd that it's listed in yours as saying not required, and apparently that's what everybody else got too. But
yeah. So, okay, the next one, Central Point, and let me see. Jasmine, you had a question about O2. Install new northbound protected left, southbound designated right turn. Verify whether this project is exempt. With whom? That's what this phone call's about.
So, Carl, that kind of leads me to an observation that I wanted to share, because although the group makes a final determination whether it's exempt or not, at least on the federal highway side, we expect for the MPO to at least make an attempt to make an initial determination, being that you have more access to the jurisdictions directly and ODOT to really understand the scope of the project, and we have project titles and a short description.
Okay, but the local jurisdictions don't know anything about this kind of stuff.
Sure, they're not knowledgeable about the categories, but they're very familiar with the project scope, and so they would be able to really communicate whether a project is adding capacity or not.
I'm confused, Jasmine. I thought the descriptions were kind of self-explanatory here. You're installing, they're upgrading the signal, and they have to upgrade the signal because they're installing new northbound protected left and southbound designated right. That's what they're doing. Now, granted, the exemption could be more. It could also include table 2 channel or table 3 channelization as well, and I'd be more than happy to throw that in there. But from
is that what they're doing, Carl?
They're changing the signal because they're adding turn lanes. So they're going to have a protected turn lane. To have a protected turn lane, you need green arrows. To have that, you have to change the signal. So it's actually, sorry?
No. I'm good.
No? Oh, okay. So I can add channelization to this as well, because that could also apply. I don't have a problem with that. But they're actually, I mean, they're applying to upgrade the signal. And it's self-funded anyway. No federal funds. So it's basically an operational thing. They want it in there so that it's eligible for federal funds if they want it. But my question do you not think it's exempt?
It's more of a, from my perspective, it's more of a reassurance that the MPO has done its due diligence to really look at these projects closely so that we provide the final determination, but we rely heavily on the information that's provided and frankly your initial determination. And so when I asked for verification, that's really all it is can you really support a project being either exempt or not?
Well, again, my determination is that it is under
Great. And that's what I'm asking for, a verification.
Verify with who? You're confusing me, Jasmine. Who am I meant to verify this with? That's what I thought the interagency consultation was all about.
So from my perspective, the interagency consultation makes that final determination. The MPO makes the initial determination. And when I when I use the word verify, I guess it's verify with Carl, which kind of makes, I guess yourself, for this particular project, this is Central Point. I guess if I was in your shoes, I would consult with Central Point to really understand the scope of the project. But I guess I would verify with the jurisdiction. But if it sounds like the MPO is working independently.
I'm sorry. We asked the locals to provide us with the projects they want. When the project is a little confusing, we ask them for clarification. I didn't think this project was confusing. I thought it was self-explanatory. That's why I gave it the exemption status.
Carl, if I can add something here. If I were looking at this, CP001 is very clear. New signal under description, new signal under conformity status. 002 does not mention a signal under description. I would think that was probably more channelization than signalization. The signalization is a product of the channelization, adding the right and left lane. So if you add in the channelization there, I have a better understanding. There's no mention of signals in the description itself.
You're right. It's under the location, and I can move that over because it says please. Amric at East Pine Signal. Right.
If you would, please do.
I'll clarify the description and add the channelization for the exempt status.
Thank you.
06. Well, are there any questions on any of the others? We have widened Pine Street here, adding travel lanes.
Yes.
Two paved travel lanes. Yeah. Yes.
I have a question I asked before, that is there an intersection that is getting a new dedicated turn lane with this project?
When before did you ask that? It's not in your email.
Just in general, when we were doing the build projects. So this one says one continuous left turn lane. I just want to know if that continues through the intersection.
Yes, it's what is called often a twiddle. In other states, it's called a suicide lane.
So then this should be 93127 as well.
And it we could add that as well.
Okay.
So, Carl, this is Ben. This gets back to my question that we had earlier when we were still discussing the build air quality conformity determination document, and it has to do with projects where we have multiple or potentially overlapping exemptions that are occurring. And this is why I'm asking that question, because it comes up and it has come up in all three of these Central Point projects. You know, for example, at CP002, the location says Harnick at East Pine Signal upgrade. And then, of course, as we've discussed, there's no discussion of a signalization that's happening in the description. And then the exemption is asking for signalization. That's because there is exactly the confusion that was pointed out. And that is that we have signalization and channelization going on here. And some folks who are reviewing this location are not familiar that Hamrick at East Pine has a signal to begin with or doesn't, right? We don't have any local familiarity. And so I think that's what is getting at Jasmine's request at verification of that, that it's really not up to Federal Highways or the IGA, the interagency group here to make that determination. It's something that should be made at the RVMPO level and brought with what you believe the exemption to be, and then we need to verify it as we just have. So I think that's what the discussion is. And so back to my question is, what do we do when we have these overlapping exemptions that are claimed, and what is that process? How is that hashed out and discussed at the MPO level?
Okay. Overlapping exemptions, is that a problem?
Well, no, but I think if they do apply or multiple apply, we may have to show that.
Oh, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. And if I've missed some, obviously I have, as well as looking at the project name. I will make those corrections. But just so I understand, I mean, it is very possible for one project to have multiple exceptions depending on what it's doing.
Yeah, and so I guess that's my question dives at is, what is that process? How do we determine which one of them ends up on this table and presented to the interagency consultation group?
Well, they should all be on there, but I mean, trying to find.
Well, Carl's looking, Ben, is your concern more about wanting to see where the overlap exists to help you in your review see that characteristics of a particular project meet multiple exemption criteria, or is it tying to how one of them is selected as the defining one?
Well, I think it's kind of a process question first off, so that Federal Highways can have some understanding and confidence in the process that's happening and where these exemptions are determined, first off. And secondly, I do have a question as to how the ultimate selection is placed here, whether it be all exemptions listed or a single exemption listed. Is it the most applicable exemption to the project that's being presented? Just more of what is that process and what are we showing?
So if I could jump in there, based on what happened back in September, I had put the most simplistic exemptions in there. I saw one issue, put it in there, and I don't think it's any exaggeration to say I got hammered by all of you all for not including every exemption that might possibly apply. Now, obviously, I've missed one here, but let's look at 07. Table 2 is the appropriate exemption, but it's a whole bunch of stuff. Bicycle and pedestrian facilities, shoulder improvements, widening narrow pavements, no additional travel lanes. All of that came out of table 2. I don't think one of those is the exemption. I think all of those, based on our conversations back in September, that's what I took away from all of that. You wanted every single exemption that applied. Am I wrong in that assumption?
Nope. In fact, that answers my question. That is indeed what you've done here, correct?
Yes. I obviously have missed one or two, but that was my intent. I tried to look at them all and say, okay, all this applies. Before we move on, Jasmine had a question about Table Rock and Vilas Road intersection. She is correct that it actually shows up in two project lists, and I had missed that. In one, this one, I said it's a channelization project. Notice it says widen to add turn lanes. And after the discussion we just had about 20 minutes ago, that would be considered channelization. I had that in there. Under Jackson County, the very same intersection, I had question marks. Because of their description of it, I wasn't sure what they were doing with it. I didn't even recognize it was the same friggin' intersection. So I will go back and correct that one. But before we move out of Central Point, so 02, obviously I need to change the project description to include the signal upgrade, and I need to add channelization to this project. Were there any other issues with any other projects?
Carl, I would just say, since you referenced our conversation from last year, I think from FTA's perspective, the intent was, you know, our focus here is on air quality and emissions. And so if a project's sort of what we like to call a kitchen sink project on our side. You're putting a lot of different elements in there. Even the one down below, I can't remember which one it is that I think you had, if you could scroll back. Oh yeah, that one there. You know, I don't know from where I am in Seattle if those no additional travel lanes means you're not, you know, you may be still purchasing right away to expand a travel lane, for example, in that case. So I guess we look to you to make sure that, you know, we're capturing all the relevant, I would say, exemptions. That's kind of where I would come at it from the four states that I work with. Relevancy is really important in terms of air quality and emissions. And if you're making bigger lanes, people might go faster and they might, you know, create more greenhouse. You know, there's all these different iterations you can go down, these hypotheticals. But I would just say the clearest example of what I think my issue was CP002, where you have a description that doesn't match the conformity status exemption.
Right.
And that happens. That's why we review these things, you know, and we can talk through them. And so it's not a huge deal for me. We caught it and we can kind of move on. I just think it makes sense for me. I don't think you need to necessarily be exhaustive if there's like 10 different exemptions, you know, that apply, but maybe the most relevant ones that cover what might be the most pertinent issues in terms of the air quality is kind of where I would come from.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Jeremy. I agree with that.
All right. So next we have Phoenix. Were there any issues on Phoenix? I didn't see any in your email, Jasmine. Again, most of this is bike ped stuff. In fact, pretty much all of it is bike ped stuff. They don't have that much money. Talent. They have one project, which I deem non-exempt. It's actually a new collector street. It's not regionally significant, but you are adding capacity, so therefore it's non-exempt. There's another one to construct another collector street down here, TA-005. Again, non-exempt. This will be modeled, just like all the others. And then Westside Bypass is a new collector street. Again, it's not regionally significant, but you are adding capacity, so it cannot be exempt. Any questions? Moving on, Eagle Point. And I don't know why the font keeps doing this to me.
Wait.
The same font as all the...
I have a question.
On talent?
I have a question on talent.
Okay.
Yeah, for 002. When you upgrade to urban major collector, I think, what exactly does that mean?
So there are a lot of smaller cities and older roads are narrower lanes. And so when they upgrade, they often widen the lanes and they add greater shoulder width as well. You are not adding travel lanes. You're just widening the lanes to the latest standard. Okay. And you'll see a lot of that in the Jackson County projects because they have Jackson County roads, in the words of the Jackson County engineer, are not as forgiving as regular roads because they're not as wide and there are ditches on either side, drainage ditches, and the shoulders tend not to be as wide. So in Jackson County, especially on Foothills Road, that wonderful road we've been discussing with the build project, they are doing the same thing that Medford is trying to do. They're trying to upgrade the road, eliminate the pop-ups and straightening out the curves, but they're just trying to make it safer. So anyway, Eagle Point. Design and right-of-way purchase for future urban upgrade. Now, this goes back to the point that I think, Ben, you made. It's not exempt. It's only a design, but they want it in the long-range plan just in case they want to pursue federal funds. So we've included it in the long-range plan.
Understood.
But it is only a design. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I understand what you're doing there.
Okay. And again, we have a lot of these multiple urban upgrade again with bike lanes, and I'm looking here at EP05. So they're, again, they're upgrading it. They're adding bicycle and pedestrian facilities. Because of the way they're doing it for the bicycles, they're making shoulder improvements and they're widening the lanes, but they're not adding additional travel lanes. And that is, you know, that's a quotation from table two. That's right out of table two. Barton Road, same thing, upgrading it. Then we have two new extensions. They're trying to make it look good by saying with bike lanes and sidewalks, but it doesn't matter. They're new roads, they're new capacity, so they're non-exempt. Two more here, they're extending existing collectors. They are not exempt. They are going to be modeled along with all these others. The next one, again, here's an urban upgrade. They're upgrading narrow roads to make them more amenable and safer, and they're adding bicycle and pedestrian amenities as well and widening the shoulders. Vista, almost identical. What's going on here? Oh, yeah, I didn't. I don't know why that happened. Again, for this one, they're upgrading to urban collector, upgrading to urban collector. It gets a little repetitive after a while. Here on EP17, it's an intersection realignment, intersection channelization. And technically, this doesn't fall into that category. A realignment, oftentimes you'll have an intersection where they're not at right angles. And what they try and do is redirect the roadways so you actually have right angle intersections. They're safer. But there's, I mean, in the categories available, there's not one that really says that. So, you know, intersection channelization, we can call it realignment if you want, but that seemed to work for me.
Carl, I don't think we had any comments on these ones from Federal Highway side in this jurisdiction, did we, Jasmine?
No, I didn't see any. Okay. Jackson County. So Jackson County, 005. So I didn't, the reason I put question marks here is they're adding a receiving lane, not a turn lane. So imagine you're approaching an intersection and you're going to make a left turn. Sometimes if you make the left turn, you just go right into the one travel lane. Sometimes you make a left turn and you get into a receiving lane that merges into a travel lane. I don't know how, I really don't honestly know how to qualify that or quantify that. As I think it's exempt. I think you would call it channelization. I don't know.
Does it add capacity at the intersection, Carl?
Well, capacity at the intersection does not mean adding capacity. We got to be clear on that. You can, anytime you add left turn lanes, you're adding capacity at an intersection. This is not at the intersection. This is coming out, coming from the intersection. You see what I'm saying? It's a receiving lane, not a turning lane.
Okay, so in your mind, is a receiving lane similar to adding a dedicated left turn lane in its function that it adds capacity at the intersection, but not lane capacity?
Yeah, I would actually argue if we're considering left turn lanes channelization, I would think this would be channelization.
And I think what I would say is, can you confirm that with your member jurisdiction that's doing the design? Is that their design intent?
I will confirm that. But it's to allow dual left turn lanes coming out of that. And it's at Table Rock. And I know the road. Hold on. Let me go there.
They actually have a double left turn lane there, Carl, that they built, but they never opened one of the left turn lanes.
Antelope Road and Table Rock Road, Oregon. Hold on, I'm going there right now.
It's right next to the ODOT office.
Yeah, it's just north of there right now. And I'm zooming in and then I'll share the screen. There is a dedicated left turn lane. So let me share the screen and show it to you. So this is Antelope Road. Can you all see the picture on the screen now?
Yeah, I got you.
Antelope runs, let's say east-west here. This is Table Rock. It runs north-south. And right down here is the ODOT office. So what they're doing is they're adding an additional turn into lane here, and I think they're going to bring it all the way down here so that you can make a left. Oops, you can make a left as you're heading westbound on Table Rock. You can make a left, go south, or westbound on Antelope, make a left heading south on Table Rock, and that lane becomes this turn lane into whatever, Mosquito Lane.
Right. I mean, that to me looks like you're adding a lane in that section, Carl.
But you're adding a turn lane.
Yeah, a continuous turn lane the entire length of the block. Am I wrong?
Okay. No, that's right. But that's again, by FHWA standards, I'm not adding travel capacity. I'm adding a turn lane. There's a difference. It's not travel capacity. I'm not adding a whole new travel lane. I'm adding a turning lane. But because it's a receiving lane and not going into the intersection, that's why I put the question mark. I didn't know how to, based on the two tables, I think it falls under channelization, but I don't know. That's why I left it a question mark. I was hoping you guys could weigh in.
So how far south of Antelope Road does that improvement go? Like, how far outside the leg of the intersection are the improvements going to be made under this project?
I think Carl's description said 0.15 miles.
Yeah, hold on. Where was that?
It was in your spreadsheet.
Yeah, I'm trying. Yes, 0.15 miles. So, what, 1,000, 1,200 feet?
I think it's like 800. So you're talking 800 okay. feet south of the intersection. Okay, so that's not the whole length of that block there. It's not continuing all the way south to that Mosquito Lane intersection.
Well, if you see that there is a turn lane already existing, you see that?
Yep.
They're going to feed that lane into that turn lane.
Right, so what we're doing is we're removing the merge.
Removing the what?
You're removing the merge of people on southbound Table Rock Road. They won't have to merge with leftbound traffic. Is that still going to be a protected left on Table Rock?
It already is a protected left onto Table Rock.
Okay, so then you're eliminating the merge with people coming right from Antelope Road.
If they want to make that left on Mosquito Lane, correct. Because by adding that receiving lane, if you can see the little hand, what will happen is you make the left and you just stay on the left side and it becomes the turn lane right there.
Yep.
If you're making that left. So again, I think that's channelization, but it's not going into the intersection. It's coming out of the intersection.
I would agree with your assessment that there are elements of channelization there, but I would also say that it has a pretty major safety component in that you're eliminating that conflict point between westbound left-hand turns from Antelope onto Table Rock and eastbound right-hand turns from Antelope onto Table Rock.
Okay, so channelization and safety eliminating a hazard.
Well, that would be my assessment based on what you've described to the project here with me, but I think the point is that that description and discussion should be had with the member jurisdiction based on their understanding of the project we really shouldn't be relying on getting to the interagency group consultation to come to that conclusion.
That is what they're doing. That's what they say they're doing in the description. The reason I had the question mark is, to me, it looked like channelization in reverse, but I didn't quite know how to say that. So, that's what they're saying. They're allowing a dual left turn from Antelope Road, and the receding lane tapers out at Mosquito Lane, at that turn lane. It just goes right into the turn lane.
Well, so I think if your assessment is that it's exempt, that's what I would show there.
Okay. I will make that clarification.
Carl, it's also 3:50, and I think this meeting was scheduled until 3:30.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Okay. Well, can I ask you all to review the project list and get back to me if you have any questions?
Sure.
I've got the ones from FHWA, and I'll be responding to those.
Carl, one of the general comments that Federal Highway had during the last go-round is that you respond to our comments as to how they're going to be addressed. Are you planning on doing that?
Respond to your comments as to how they're going to be addressed.
Right.
That's what I did. Yeah.
If I recall, that was one of the EPA's comments.
Right. And what I believe I did to respond to that was I put together everybody's comments in a spreadsheet. Each agency had a tab, and I sent that back out to everybody with my responses to their comments.
Okay. Okay. So it sounds like that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought everybody kind of liked that. That way they could see everybody's comments and my responses. The one last thing I'd like to point out, we just took a look at all the new projects. And what we did was we identified whether they would fall under one or more categories: intersection improvements, bike ped, new roadway construction, roadway safety, signal installation, and dust reduction. And then we did a little table at the end, and you can see bicycle, pedestrian, and roadway safety improvements are the two largest slices of the pie. So I think we're doing a pretty good job as far as project selection.
Carl, just one last comment regarding public involvement. I did go to the RVMPO website, and I did see that some of these items are listed for public involvement, but I did not see anything on the 2021-2045 RTP. And then also, it's a lot of the information is on the main website, but not on the public notice tab. And that's where the public would go to for public information. So you may want to look at that.
Right. Ryan and I had that conversation this morning. We are going to make that accommodation. I agree. I think better to over advertise than under advertise. As far as the 21-45 RTP, no, this has not gone out for public comment yet. We are intending to do that next week. We want to in the next 2 weeks, we want to have some chapters put together as well so that the public has an opportunity to put this stuff in context. Given the fact that we intend to adopt in April, we still have a few weeks to mess with here. But I note your comments and thank you.
Can I add one thing real quick?
You.
And I'm sorry for everybody given as long as it's gone. Just to circle back very briefly to a question that either Ben or Jeremy had on the chip seal. Regardless of how it's handled as an exempt or non-exempt project, one of the things that I admittedly glossed over when we were going through the modeling protocol for the road dust is establishing the currency of the information that I think we get. I can't remember if it's in DOT or comes out of the TPAL model on the amount of paved versus unpaved roads in the county. And that's something that we'll look to update. So that presumably would be where projects like that or actual road paving would trickle through. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Tom. And that's one of the considerations that I have and reasons for questioning the chip seal and the decision that it doesn't need to be included. So I appreciate that comment. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you all very much for your time. I do appreciate it. I'll send out, I've got a bunch of notes here, but I've recorded this meeting. I'm just going to review the recording and make sure I follow up on everything I said I would follow up on.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all.
Thanks, Carl.
Yeah, hey, thank you, Carl, and everyone.
Bye.
Okay, take care. Have a good weekend, guys.
You too.
Ladies.